Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Shirley Nin.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer, where each month Delawareans get a chance to hear directly from their governor and ask questions in real time. Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, thanks so much for joining us in studio.
Hey, Shirley, Tom, it's fantastic to be here, and good evening to everyone out there on this beautiful rainy night in the Delaware Valley.
So we are going to get through a lot over the next hour with Governor Meyer. We would love to hear from you, include your questions and comments in the mix, so you can do that by calling 888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can drop your comment in the chat. Just that simple. So, Governor, let's talk about some of the things that have happened since we last saw you a little while ago in June. For starters, Delaware has its budget in place. One thing, though, that is not there is from the bond bill, $36 million to renovate Legislative Hall. Lawmakers pushing for that funding say the building's in dire need of security and accessibility upgrades. You disagreed. Line item vetoed that particular spending. Why was that?
So thanks, Tom. 18 months ago when I came into office, there was doubt that the state government had the capacity to actually deliver for Delawareans. We had received tremendous support from the Biden administration, as all state governments did across the country during COVID. There had been serious economic changes during COVID that causes state budgets to balloon. And there was some challenges to our corporate franchise, which pays for about 30% of our state budget. And I remember days after I was sworn in, we were looking at the budget and people were wondering, how are you going to pay for this year? And how are you going to pay for this next year and in the years beyond? Now, 18 months later, my second year, my second balanced budget, not a single tax raised this year. New and historic investments in education, in workforce, in childcare, expanding purchase of care, new protections to protect ratepayers with data centers and things like that. Just three bills I signed yesterday. We're doing exciting things to protect people. John Lewis Voting Rights Act, piloted by Larry Lambert, signed into law. We're proud of it. The way to do it is through disciplined government. We can't just sign everything that comes through, every idea somebody has. There was a long process that resulted in a plan to renovate Legislative Hall, over $100 million, the entire plan. There are serious issues with security and lack of access for people with disabilities, making sure there's ramps, making sure the key areas of the building are all ADA accessible. That's a top priority for a functioning democracy. Those things, that package, because it's been thoroughly researched, costs about 15, maybe with contingencies, $20 million. They have a plan for over $100 million. At a time when we don't have resources, in over 2 years, we have not approved any new school construction. We have over $1 billion, with a B, in Little Delaware, over $1 billion of school projects lined up. All I'm saying is let's take care of the security and ADA compliance issues.
So you would be okay if they came back with a different plan that was
already
cheaper?
It's not even coming up with a different plan. The plan is there, and I've already committed to sitting down in January and making sure it gets funded.
Okay.
Well, one of my colleagues at HYY, Sarah Mueller, she spoke to State Rep. Deborah Heffernan about this recently, and Heffernan is the co-chair of the Bond Bill Committee. She had this to say.
I feel it was unprecedented, irresponsible, and dangerous. And I do want to say that I know that Governor Meyer has a tendency to take retaliatory action through vetoes and, you know, my legislation, but I'm speaking out because it's so important.
So I know that you had said that there are plans in the works to take care of some of those other issues, but was this retaliatory?
Let's be clear.
In any way?
Of course not. Let's be clear about what's actually happening here. These are legislators who've been in office for years and years. Representative Heffernan is retiring now after decades of service. I salute her for her service. I got elected because the decisions that were being made in Dover and the outcomes that they were producing are producing schools that are in the bottom five or six in the country. Energy prices that are skyrocketing. We recently replaced 80% of our Public Service Commission that regulates the utilities in the state, particularly Delmarva. Healthcare that's inaccessible and cost too much in parts of our state. Growth that's out of control and needs to be brought under control. People like Representative Heffernan would be very happy if I just went along and gotten these little rooms with them and agreed to spend $100 million here and there. That's not what Governor Meyer was elected to do. I was elected to scrutinize every line, to say, yes, security is important. Yes, ADA compliance is important. But what they're doing is when they see that there's a disagreement, a legitimate disagreement, that, wait a second, we need to protect people outside legislative hall as much as, if not more than, we're protecting people inside legislative hall, they get very, very frustrated and start lodging accusations of all
sorts. Were there other projects?
I don't understand. Let me say one more thing, Tom. I don't understand. Retaliating for what?
Disagreeing.
Retaliating.
For disagreeing with you on any level
on
or
what?
Maybe.
I signed Representative Heffernan bills yesterday that I know were very important to her on energy. So I don't understand. Usually if you say you're retaliating unfairly, you say for what? I don't know what it is. I've made very clear for a long time my concern about the expense of the legislative hall project. Back in November, I think it was, when we needed to find money to feed our people for SNAP, I had to find a project to put on hold. We looked at a series of projects. The project I put on hold was a legislative hall parking lot that was already approved. I think parking is important. It's important we invest in our building and public infrastructure, but I think people eating is more important.
Were there other projects that you looked at in the bond bill?
Absolutely. I looked at every project, Tom. This is public money.
Were there any that you seriously considered line item?
There are.
Were there any?
We're not going to talk about. I don't have the list in front of me, but the public can be rest assured that when there's like a $1 billion budget, I don't remember how much specifically was in the bond bill, but we went through line by line. There was a story that I think WHYY covered that I called the chair of the Joint Finance Committee about the budget. And I said, hey, I have these three or four questions.
This was the grant and aid bill, I think.
Yeah, grant and aid. Thank you.
I did want to ask about that because you did sign that. You took about 3 weeks to look it over. That did create some angst among the nonprofits who are kind of on very tight budgets right now.
And the accusations in that article about they weren't going to make payroll and the payments were delayed. Did any of that happen? We don't know. There wasn't a follow-up article, but I'll tell you this. None of those concerns that were raised ever happened.
Well, let me ask this question. Is there a way to examine the budget bills sooner and rather than waiting until after the fact?
You know the best way? If the legislature isn't up in the middle of the night on June 30th, there's no reason.
Well, the bills are filed before that, though.
I mean, they're changed. They're revised.
And there are hearings.
Sure. I
mean, should there be more engagement in that process to get to a finish line
there
faster?
There was engagement. Listen, if you have 6 months to complete a task, right, you're reviewing hundreds and hundreds of bills, you want to do it in the public eye. You don't just want it to be the legislatures and the governor, the legislators, or not even the legislators, but a few leading legislators and the governor behind closed doors playing. You want it to be in public view. But what happened, and it's my second year going through this, and it's unbelievable. In a functioning democracy, you'd have the bill out for everybody to see. You'd have public comments for weeks, which happens. And then people go behind closed doors, change a lot of things the last few days. They reviewed over 100 bills, the House and the Senate, in the last day. June 30th, they start at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. They went to, I think, 6 in the morning. That's not a public process. I'm begging, let's have a public process. So what happens when they're doing things at the middle of the night is I will be vigorous and diligent in going through every single line, not for me, but to protect you, to protect you. Who knows what they're doing? There are all sorts of, it wasn't just the legislators in the building. It wasn't it was not the average citizens. They were all sleeping. It was lobbyists who were paid by someone to make sure they could get a line in this, a line in that. So you better gosh darn believe it. I'm going to take weeks to review every single line with my lawyers protecting every Delawarean. That's my job.
Well, what you're asking for seems reasonable. And so what will change then going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I know Governor Carney, he can speak now, Mayor Carney, but, you know, my predecessor had similar concerns. Legislative leadership 4 or 5 years ago sat down. There was always a history of you kind of spend all night in legislative hall, and they changed things.
Yeah.
And for a few years, they managed to get out at a reasonable time on June 30th, and which gives the public an opportunity to view what's really going on here. I'm going to be fighting harder to make sure that happens in the future.
Okay, another bill that hit your desk recently was SB 462, which essentially extended the split tax rates created in Newcastle County last year in response to equity issues that developed following the first in decades property reassessment. Now, you didn't veto it, but you made a choice not to sign it. Why?
So the one issue I had with Senate Bill 462, which basically says that you can charge residential real estate different than commercial real estate. So it allows school districts to charge 85% higher tax rates to commercial real estate than residential real estate, which seems fair to me. If Amazon or a big, you know, company, you want to make sure that they get charged a fair share, and you want to make sure families can are charged a fair rate as well. The problem with it is it included rental properties in commercial real estate. The consequence of that is that if you have a two bedroom, 800 square foot apartment, that's being charged 85% higher rate in some school districts than multi-million dollar homes that are owner occupied. That's wrong. And it's bad if we want to address an affordable housing crisis. We, in the first 18 months of my term, actually in the last 12 months, according to Realtor.com, improved affordability in Delaware faster than any state in the country. Again, according to Realtor.com, we were 19th most affordable state in the country last year. Today, we're 7th. We did that by bold, creative policymaking. And when you set property tax rates so differential that actually discourage the building of rental housing, it's really bad if we want families to be able to afford housing.
So this was another situation where there was some sharp response from state lawmakers, including State Representative Kim Williams. We'll take a listen to that right now.
Technically, we're here doing all this because this whole process was done under him when he was county executive. So it would have been nice that, you know, he would have told us that these issues are coming. We could have worked together to pause reassessment or work on reassessment before people actually got their bills.
So this is not the first time we've heard someone suggest that you could have done something more different as county executive during reassessment. What do you say to Representative Williams and others who continue to suggest that, and in her case, would have liked you to support this bill by signing it?
Are a lot of things I wish Representative Williams and her colleagues did for the 40 years in the case of Newcastle County, 50 years in the case of Sussex County, 35 years in the case of Kent County, when there was no reassessment done. I, as county executive, with Todd Lawson, who led Sussex County, Mike Pettit-Damage, 6 years ago, went to see the governor, went to talk to legislators to say, we need help. Reassessment is a mess. Our property tax assessments are a mess. This is a basic equity issue. It's a housing issue. If we ever want to truly address the inequities in our school system, there's been plentiful research saying we need to address this. You know what they told us? They said, it's your problem. You go figure it out. It's not that's too politically toxic. We got sued and I stood up and I said, you know what? We're going to do this. I called the other county leaders. I said, let's be the people that say this is the right thing to do. It's going to be hard. Everyone's going to come at us. Numerous people said this will certainly end your career because people like Representative Williams are going to come out and say, oh, you did this. It's hard, but we got there. And I'll tell you this. On average, Newcastle County homeowners are paying less today in property taxes before the recent tax rate increase by my successor, Marcus Henry. They are paying less, or at least last tax year, they were paying less in property taxes than they were before the reassessment. Have there been an imperfection? Do I agree with everything that my successor, Marcus Henry, did? Of course not. This is a hard process. Sitting around and pointing fingers for those who had the courage to stick their neck out and say, let's do this. Our schools need it. We need it to get our housing policy right. We need it to move our community forward.
So you brought up the issue of rental properties. Is there something that the state or the county can do at this point to address that problem and overall just kind of, you know, ensure the tax equity issue is more permanently solved going forward?
Yeah, there are a number of things. If the rental, a simple thing is you take any residential rental property and you include it with the owner-occupied property. So million-dollar homes will be taxed at the same level as $1,000, $1,500 a month apartments. That's one thing. There are other things as well that can be done to address it, and we'll be looking at those and doing what we can to support those policies. So but again, there are a lot of people in Dover who really don't want things to change, and they really want things their way. And if you have a good faith disagreement, they will come at you in every way. They will go through everything and try to rip you apart here or there. That's secondary. What we need to do is make bold decisions. We need to stick our necks out. We need to move our state forward. Given the choice, I do the same thing again.
So let's move on to a beneficiary of property taxes. That's education. When you talked in March to us, you said Delaware wasn't going to reach its education goals through one grand strategy, but by focusing on the details of classroom instruction and steadily improving performance school by school. We have the new state testing results from students for this past school year. They show just modest gains in literacy and math proficiency. You had, and your education department had set very clear aggressive goals to hit by 2028. 2026 numbers show third grade reading at 40%. The goal was 53%. Eighth grade math, the goal 35%. This year it's at 29%. Do you feel confident the work that's being done right now that has been done will take hold and accelerate those numbers, or do you feel these numbers indicate that more drastic measures are needed immediately?
And it's a great question. 6 months ago, we sat down with the team to set goals. I felt like one thing that was lacking when I taught, I as a teacher was required by the state and the way they assessed my performance to set goals for the end of the year in terms of where my students would be, the student progress. But I felt like our governor and the leadership of the state never had to set those same goals for ourselves. So we said, let's set goals. And of course, everybody's like, let's set goals that we kind of know we're going to achieve, right? That we know we can get to. I said, no, let's set bold goals of where we think the state needs to be. So these goals, you're saying 53% literacy up from 32%. I think that those are hard to achieve. So understand right. that. What we saw in the test results that were released last week, number one, we are not as a state where we need to be in proficiency, mm-hmm. right? In English or in math. No way. As a math teacher, it's embarrassing. We really need to see the needle move more. In high school, where everyone's taking the SAT, yes. and there's some issues with that test itself that have been...
You're going to sunset that.
That's right. We're working on sunsetting it and finding a more reasonable test. But they're putting that aside, they're particularly awful, if I can say. They need a lot of work. What the testing did show is that the intensive investments we've made in literacy that really just started in like November, December, January, the past 6-7 months, those schools, we looked at a few targeted schools for those literacy investments, science of reading investments in the lowest performing elementary and middle schools in literacy in the state. They showed tremendous gains. You had two or three schools that had single digit literacy proficiency numbers last year that jumped by 8-10% are no longer single digit proficiency schools. So
you feel optimistic then?
I think we need a lot more work.
Okay.
I don't like to look at 15-16% proficiency numbers up from 7%, 8% and say I'm optimistic. I like to say, let's learn from this experience. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth investing additional resources to see if we can move those in some of our lowest performing schools, 16-17% proficiency to 25-30% proficiency, which also to me as a teacher is not acceptable. But I think we're learning from the data. We're eager to work with people to find the strategies that are working, maybe working in some places, not in others, make smart investments to move our education system forward.
Sure.
Okay, moving on. So we've talked about rising utility costs a lot over the months. And Governor, you've been very critical of Delmarva in the past. So let's listen to a clip from one of our conversations in the spring.
What we need to do, people like myself, really need to be doing every day is focusing our government and our resources on people, not on corporations. We have an electric utility, Delmarva, largest electric utility. Their parent company, Exelon, recently announced profits of $7.2 billion in a year, $300 million more than was forecasted. They're making it off the backs of Delawareans who can, and others, but Delawareans who cannot afford their power bills. So we need to stand up for people, not for corporations.
Now, Delmarva Power reached out to us recently asking for a chance to weigh in on this conversation. And joining us on the line is Marcus Beal, Delmarva Power's region president. Marcus, what is your question for Governor Meyer?
Good evening, Governor, and good evening, Tom and Shirley. Thank you for having us. I'll start by just saying, you know, I'm calling in as a proud Delawarean, born and raised here, went to the University of Delaware, started at this company as an intern more than 20 years ago. So when we're talking about energy bills, we're talking about my neighbors, friends, family's bills. So, Governor Meyer, I'd like to put one number on the table. Since January 2024, the typical Delmarva Power electric bill has increased by about $28, and nearly $26 of that, about 90%, is tied to PJM supply costs. That's the cost of the electricity itself, set in a regional market. It's passed straight through to our customers with no markup from Delmarva Power. And I'd add that this isn't just a Delaware story. Wholesale power prices across all the 13 states in PJM jumped more than 70% year over year this spring. So we know you, governors in both parties in Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Jersey, and Maryland have all been raising the same alarm. Delaware is one of many states living through this national electricity supply shortage. So my exact question, we've talked broadly about our all-the-above approach to helping with higher bills. Customer assistance, energy efficiency. We've even curtailed some investments we believe are needed, knowing that could affect reliability for our customers down the road. And Governor, acknowledging that supply costs are driving higher bills, would you support us building and owning batteries or solar and other forms of generation to help address these rising energy supply costs?
Marcus, thanks for your question.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Is he still on the line? Because I'd like to ask Marcus a question. The quick answer to his question is we're reviewing it. There's a lot of concern. What he didn't tell you is that the cost of transmission has jumped, far outpacing inflation in the last 5 years for Delawareans. There have been 3 rate increases in the last 5 years. And I'd like to hear from Marcus if he's that dedicated to the affordability of Delawareans. He understands there's an affordability crisis. We understand. We have a president focused on changing the names of lakes and gulfs rather than focusing on the affordability crisis we're facing. Is he willing to get Delmarva to withdraw their current rate case to increase rates on Delawareans? They're fighting right now to increase rates on every Delmarva customer. And I'd like to ask him right now if he'd be willing to withdraw it and we can sit down and talk about his proposal to own generation.
Marcus, are you still on the line?
I am still on the line. So, Governor, I appreciate that. I would focus on the 90% of the increase in our bills that's tied to supply costs. So while our investments in the grid, you know, our bill, about 30% of that we're responsible for, about 60% of that bill is tied to supply. So we need to focus on the solution for that issue to really make an impact on our customer bills, which drives me back to our question about things that impact generation in the state. So that's what we'd really like to partner with you, your team, this General Assembly, to really focus on batteries first and solar along with that, and then talk about those larger initiatives like, you know, larger generation projects that could potentially help bring down our costs for our customers here.
Thank you, Marcus. So what Marcus is focusing on, that in your electricity bill, there are two parts of the bill. Mm-hmm. There's supply generation, and then there's transmission and distribution. He's saying Delmarva is actually, they're just pass-through on the generation, and they're really responsible just for transmission and distribution. He's saying the generation costs are going way up. It's not our fault. What he's not mentioning is that the transmission and distribution costs are also going way up. So just now I'm asking him, they're trying to increase them even more.
You're asking them to just drop the whole rate increase
request. The whole rate increase.
Would you be willing, because I know that the PSC chair said settlements are preferred. Would you be willing to sit down and talk about a settlement rather than just dropping the whole thing together?
Tom,
would you be willing to do
that? Marcus reports to his boss at Delmarva, mm-hmm. who reports ultimately to a board and reports to shareholders. shareholders are trying to make a profit. They see $7.24 billion in revenue in their last report. They're trying to increase that this year. They saw profits that outpaced estimates by $300 million. They're trying to figure out how to increase it. I report to different shareholders. I report to the people of Delaware. Beth called us last week, a retiree on fixed income. She shared that the increase in her bill is causing her to decide between paying for food and paying her bill. Brenda is a retiree whose bill increased $500. I can go on and on.
So, but you're just like, you just want them to drop. Would you be willing to talk about some kind of middle ground? Yes or no?
I don't know what middle ground there is. When they keep increasing rates, maybe that's what they want is a middle ground. They came to the Public Service Commission. They came to the Public Service Commission asking that they get profits on this rate case of 10.5%. 10.5%, no risk, profit. You tell me anyone who can do anything getting 10.5% profit, no risk. It's not being, and now you want me to compromise?
Okay.
I'm not going to do that for Delaware.
But what could they do differently?
Well, we are up against the brakes.
What
could they do differently that would actually lower the bills?
Well, I mean, there are a number of things. They could help us. We have a long queue of solar projects that they've delayed putting on the grid. We have made progress on that in the last few months. And also, they can really scrutinize within their own operations the transmission, the capital investments that they make for reliability. They're investing heavily in reliability and expecting Delawareans to foot the bill.
All right, we've got to stop it there for a moment. We'll be back after this. This is Ask Governor Meyer.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne. With us live in our Philadelphia studio is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer.
He's taking questions from us and from you this hour. If you have a question or a comment, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org or call in at 888-477-9499. Okay, Governor, we're going to start with a subject that has a lot of Delawareans a little freaked out, the recent measles outbreak. Delaware hasn't had a single case in the last 10 years. Now, there are 22 cases, all confined to Kent County. Now, that number seems to have plateaued for now, but can you tell us what the state's been doing to keep this in check?
First of all, get vaccinated. I just cannot emphasize enough, please, if you have not already taken two doses of the MMR vaccine, contact your physician, stop by a local urgent care or hospital, or you can just Google Delaware vaccine and you can learn information about it. Measles is a deadly disease, as we learned tragically a few days ago in Pennsylvania, not far from the Delaware border. A couple individuals were lost. All of those 22 individuals in Delaware you referenced are from a single community. All of them are unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. The vaccination, the MMR vaccine, has a 97% efficacy rate. It's 97% effective. It's very important everybody gets vaccinated, not just for you and your family, but there are babies. There are seniors. There are people with compromised immune systems. And when you make a decision not to get vaccinated, you're putting them at risk as well. We've done a few things. Number one, with the misinformation and disinformation, sometimes lack of information coming out of Washington, we very quickly named a Surgeon General, Dr. Neil Hochstein, who has decades of experience practicing medicine to help us set policy and lead the way in the nation in protecting our people. The second is we have state-of-the-art technology. Thanks to Governor Carney, my predecessor, and the leadership of the state, and President Biden, who gave states resources to make investment to make sure that there weren't pandemics in the future. We have state-of-the-art technology, the mapping technology to map where the disease is, mm-hmm. both measles and cyclospora and other disease, to look where it is, where we think it's going. We have state-of-the-art genomic technology that's helping with that. And third, I have to mention, my team came to me, several of them don't even know my history, and they talked a lot about our wastewater testing that we have, which those of you who know what I did at the county, we were among the first counties to use wastewater testing during COVID. It's a way to have sort of not to get too gross, but it's a community stool sample. So you can see, without looking at any individual's stool, you can get a sense from the community where a certain disease is or a virus is. We're using all of those technologies to keep Delawareans safe. Right now, what Delawareans should do is check your vaccination records, make sure You are safe. As you mentioned, for the last 10 days, we've had no new cases, and we're hoping, we're praying this is the beginning of the end.
Okay. So you believe that this plateau is sort of a sign that things are under control.
I'm hoping that that's the case. Yes.
Okay. I do want to bring up a comment, a little off topic, and then we're kind of going to be jumping around here, but I want to bring in this comment that we received. Nicholas wrote in to ask, since the start of the year, the city of Wilmington has faced major problems around homelessness and the killing of Kadir Skinner by police. Governor Meyer, do you have confidence in Mayor John Carney's ability to lead Wilmington?
Look, Mayor John Carney was elected by the people of Wilmington. He has extraordinary experience. I leave it to the people of Wilmington and that city council to determine the best way forward. In the case of Kadir Skinner, I absolutely need to make sure that there's accountability with police agencies. When we give an individual a weapon, allow them to put on a uniform to keep us safe, we need to make sure everything they're doing is keeping people safe. And when they're not, when they're acting wrongly, when it causes harm, when it causes death, people need to be held accountable. There need to be systems for full and impartial investigations. And just like we do in all cases, we're looking closely at the Kadir Skinner case to see what can we do to tighten and improve state law to make sure that happens.
I want to read one more comment before we move on. Jennifer from Lewis asks, when are you going to sign the biomarker bill? You seem so proud of it, and yet you haven't signed it.
I am very proud of it. It's one of the bills that I talked about in my State of the State. We put it in my budget. It requires insurance companies to cover life-saving tests on biomarkers that give some indication of your health future. Mm-hmm. It's very important. It will be signed. Often the case of when things get signed, you want to make sure to include. There were a lot of people that helped to make that possible. We want to make sure they can all be there for the signing. But have no concern. That bill will be signed very shortly, within weeks.
Okay. You mentioned the new Surgeon General. So let's talk about this new Surgeon General. Delaware has never had this position before. How did you go about the hiring process?
I did the same thing I did when we set up our Office of Workforce Development, Office of New Americans, Office on Gun Violence Prevention, where we looked at who were the individuals available to us. We didn't have much time. Dr. Hochstein has done tremendous work. In my campaign and even prior to my campaign, I was talking about the need for a medical school. Delaware is one of four states in America without a medical school. We needed a four-year medical education in our state. Dr. Hochstein made it happen within 12 months. It's announced we'll be, in a matter of months, we'll be taking applications along with Jefferson Medical School for students. He's done tremendous work leading our healthcare commission. And I have not heard, amidst all the news articles about new Surgeon General, I've not heard from anyone that Dr. Hochstein is the wrong person. He clearly is the right person.
There are some issues. Some state lawmakers have felt left out of the decision-making process, and they were caught off guard by the nearly $270,000 salary that comes with funding this new position. Why didn't you speak to legislators or the legislature creating the position?
We did.
Okay. What do you say to those who might still feel frustrated or feel blindsided?
Particularly about the price, the salary, I guess, is, you know, with some of them were specific.
We have a $7 billion budget. Okay. What does it cost if your mother dies of measles because they were following ridiculous information, misinformation coming out of Washington from the now CDC, from NIH, from the Surgeon General in Washington? They get misinformation and disinformation. When you have a $7 billion budget, one of the most important things you do is keep people safe. You have to spend some money. You have to make investments to say, hey, we're going to keep you safe.
Okay, we're going to turn to our Reporter's Notebook segment. This month, our dispatch comes from Serena Grossi, Sussex County reporter for WHYY.
Hi, Governor Meyer. Last month, you signed into law Senate Bill 23, also known as the Housing for Every Delawarean Act. The goal is to create more affordable housing statewide by putting pressure on local governments to ease up on building restrictions. However, many local officials are critical. One sticking point is a section of the bill that allows certain residential developments to be approved by right That means if they meet zoning requirements, they can be approved without a public hearing. Sussex County Administrator Todd Lawson says public hearings are often the only opportunity residents have to voice concerns about developments.
Concerns related to the environment, to the road, to water quality, to the impacts on local public safety, all of that is addressed in the public hearing and is heard during the public hearing, and that's now gone.
It's important to note that these developments can have public meetings, but public comment would be limited to whether the project meets objective standards, and only written comment would be accepted. What is your response to this criticism? And how should the state strike a balance between increasing affordable housing and taking into account Delawareans' concerns about developments affecting their neighborhoods?
So, Governor, how do you respond to Serena?
Yeah, the pressures right now in Sussex County are among the most challenging growth pressures of any county or any region in the country. People want to be in Delaware. The low cost of living, the high quality of life, and that's creating growth pressures and challenges. Some of what Serena said is straight up wrong, right? Let me be clear that when there's a by right plan, right? This is going back to my county executive days. When there's a by right plan, what that means by definition is that whoever's developing can develop by right. They don't need to go and get a zoning change or go to local boards and get an adjustment to law. They have the right to build. The goal of Senate Bill 23 is not to reduce public input or public comment on almost every development I had experience with in Newcastle County, whether it required a zoning change or not. There was extensive public input and public comment, and your organizations do a fantastic job making sure information is disseminated to the public so they can have a point of view on something and take a stand where necessary. What this is saying is what Senate Bill 23 says, where someone has a right to build, let's not create sort of red tape and barriers to prevent them from building. It also adds fees so that developers need to pay into a pot so that development can be done responsibly, so that infrastructure can come before development and that we can grow in a smart way.
But many of these municipalities, not just Sussex County, Lewis, Georgetown, have all expressed concerns about this portion that Serena was talking about basically, you know, not having the public comments, you know, not the written comments, but having actual public comment sessions. They've all kind of started saying, well, maybe we're going to stop now, take a moratorium on things until we sort this out. Is there a discussion that has to be had here? Because clearly it's not just Sussex County. It's multiple municipalities that are saying, we have a problem with
right.
this.
Listen, I was in local government, and many times I went to the state government. No one was listening to me. I have no problem sitting down with any local officials to discuss this. And if modifications need to be made, we'll make modifications. The goal here is to address a housing crisis, to address an infrastructure crisis, and make sure that if there's going to be growth, it's smart growth in areas where it's intended to be, not out in areas where it's not intended, that takes away open space and potentially threatens the environment.
Okay,
moving on. A major news story broke yesterday. Meta, Facebook, and Instagram's parent company settled a landmark lawsuit brought by 47 states, including Delaware. The lawsuit claimed that these companies knowingly got kids hooked on their platforms, and then that undermined their mental health. Meta is now settling for $17 billion. What is your reaction?
I think overall it's good. I have not read every word of the settlement, and I don't believe the settlement agreement has yet been approved by
a
judge.
Right, that's correct, yeah.
A lot of times the emphasis is $17 billion, like how much they sued for a lot more than that. Why only $17 billion? I ask people before they look at them. I haven't looked closely at the money. I think for Delaware, at least, at a minimum, it's going to be about $69-70 million dollars.
Up to 130, I think, yes.
Right.
Depending on if other platforms get
that's
involved.
Right. And so, listen, that can mean a lot of things. More importantly, are the restrictions within the settlement agreement. Limiting kids' time on social media. Restricting time at night and things. I think it's a step forward in recognizing the truly healthcare and mental health crisis that we are in with respect to technology generally and social media in particular. I was talking with our Surgeon General, with Dr. Hochstein, 2 days ago, and you can imagine he has extensive experience as an ear, nose, and throat physician, a doctor, surgeon, right? You can imagine the health concerns that he has. And what we talked about is how when we were kids, right? We were kids. If someone were sitting here in a room like this and pulled out a cigarette or cigar and started smoking, I don't think we'd think anything of it. If Shirley, I saw you drive up tonight and it was 30, 40 years ago and you were not wearing a seatbelt, I don't think I would have thought anything of it. Both of those today are seen as, you know, lethal, as deadly. If you're to drive down 95 without a seatbelt on, that's deadly. I think these things that we have, I imagine close to all the listeners or people watching, they might be watching on it or they might have it nearby. They might be listening on it. But it is just as lethal, or if not more lethal, than cigarettes, than driving fast without a seatbelt. These things are extremely dangerous. We have research on it, and this is a step forward in protecting our children.
Well, we're all parents, and I know that we're all navigating this uncharted path together.
Yeah, and it's hard to find a child. I mean, I have three kids, and even my 2.5-year-old, he sees a phone, he goes right to it. So it's something that we all need to reckon with. Hopefully this settlement is a step forward to know that some of these companies maybe, possibly, will be partners in trying to address this crisis.
So very quickly, I want to move over to the Port of Wilmington. There's additional legal action being taken, two new legal challenges filed associated with the expansion project at Edgemore. One round permits, the other round oversight of the port in recent years. Any concern that these new legal hurdles will derail the project, which has a formal groundbreaking scheduled for next month?
Can I tell you a secret?
Sure.
Ground has already been broken.
Well, yeah, the work is already going.
Work's already going. Yeah, the
clearing.
Like the scheduling that bill signing, scheduling the groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Is challenging and taking time. I wish it wasn't covered as litigation against the port that had any merit. This is a competitor. Let's be serious. This is a competitor who has sued time and time and time and time again to try to stop a competitor. In a way, it's a good sign. If he didn't care about us, maybe we didn't have anything that good. We are on, I think, a gold mine with respect to global logistics. One thing that's very interesting is when good things happen, when bad things happen, when the market goes in one way or another way, what happens over time is global logistics market grows and grows. In the Port of Wilmington, we have an opportunity to build a global leading port. We've already broken ground. It's very exciting. We're not going to let a competitor suing us stop us.
Okay, we're going to pause there for now. In just a moment, we'll be back with Delaware Governor Matt Meyer to look at politics and Delaware's upcoming primary races. This is Ask Governor Meyer.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. A democracy is built on trust in its institutions, but Americans appear to be losing faith in their government, the courts, the media, and other pillars of society. For instance, do you trust the new guidance from Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on vaccines? Or do you have faith that the Supreme Court is impartial in its rulings? We want to know which institutions you still trust. Next time on The Middle. Coming up next on WHYY.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Tom Byrne. Joining us this hour live is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, and it's not too late to join the conversation.
Email askgovmeyer at whyy.org or call us at 888-477-9499. And if you're watching our live stream on YouTube or Facebook, leave your comments in the chat.
So, Governor, we're just a couple of weeks away now from the Delaware primaries. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the races. You endorsed challengers to some incumbent Democrats in the state Senate running for re-election. So I'll ask directly, specifically, what was it about Senators Cruz and Siegfried's records that made you feel someone else would be better suited for the job?
Let's be clear. What does it mean if you're an incumbent? It means you were already elected to a position,
yes.
Correct? These are two senators, neither of whom were ever elected to their position before. They were appointed by a party committee, by an insider party committee through an insider
process.
Well,
they did win the special election. I understand what you're saying, but they did get elected. They were duly elected at a general election.
12 years ago, when I was a teacher, when you teach, one thing you get to know pretty well is the parents of your kids. You can tell who's there, who's attentive, who cares, and who maybe needs to care a little bit more. Shea Frisbee was the mother of one of my students, Nate. This is an extraordinary woman who's been a community activist, a leader, a small business woman who it was always looking out for other kids and other families before she was looking out for her own. We are at a time, look at what our president's doing. He's spending time renaming lakes and bodies of water, continuing a war that nobody wants, while we have an affordability crisis that just is getting worse and worse in our community. We need people in Dover who are going to stick their necks out. Won't always agree with me. I get it. But we need people who are going to stick their necks out, who understand how challenging things are truly for people and is going to work with urgency. If we could have everyone like Shea Frisbee run for office, our country would be in such a better place. Adriana Boehm, I got off a plane from Iraq where I served as a diplomat 15 years ago. A friend of mine, Brian Tracy, was running for Red Clay School Board. I agreed to work with him, to help him out. He was running against a woman named Adriana Boehm. I met her on Election Day outside a school where people were coming in to vote. I was astonished. I still wanted my friend Brian to win. My friend Brian lost. Adriana won, and I followed her career. She performs extraordinary service to the community. Same thing. She gets in front of people. She does hard work, raised kids. I think those are the kind of people we need in office.
So I just want to clarify, it's more about their resumes or the fact that the other two were elected in a special election?
This has everything to do with how do we get people who are going to make courageous decisions and do the right thing for people. Shea and Adriana are exactly the kind of people we should be actively encouraging. Any good Democrat should look at Shea, look at Adriana, say that's exactly who we want running for office. That's exactly who we want representing us in Dover.
So we've talked a lot over the course of this hour about some of the friction between yourself and state lawmakers. I just want to ask, I mean, because that's normally a good thing, right? The debate is good. But is there a point where it becomes counterproductive? Do you ever worry that at some point it becomes a little too much schoolyard?
For 80 years, we've had a funding formula. We had the oldest formula of a state to fund its schools in the country. Think of the values people had in the 1940s when they're, you know, while Jim Crow was still flaming across our country, we were making a funding formula in Delaware that stayed until this day. I said we were going to change it. I'm not the first. Governors have talked about changing it for decades. We sat down with our legislature, with legislative leaders. We got it done. We had a crisis of housing affordability in our state, right? Showing people really, really struggling. Some are still struggling. We've invested more in affordable housing in my first 2 years than any two-year period in our state's history. As I mentioned, Realtor.com had Delaware ranked 19th in terms of affordability. Today, we're 7th. That's not because of me. That's because of partnership with legislative leaders willing to do bold things. Yesterday, I signed into place the most extensive and comprehensive limitations on data centers building of any state in the country. That's not me. That's Senator Hansen, Representative Burns leading the way with some input from us, you know, figuring out how do we work together and move this forward. I can go on and on. The John Lewis Voting Rights Act replacing some of the stuff Trump is taking away with his crazy allegations. We're moving this state forward in historic ways. I know that there's a desire. I'm not going to go after the media, but anytime there's any conflict or disagreement, you're going to report it. You're going to replay the recordings. But by and large, we are getting things done for our state in historic ways, and we ain't stopping now.
I want to hit a couple more questions, and I want to go quickly here. We're almost out of time, so I want to point out one area where you are working with others in the National Governor Association's new National Task Force on Immigration Reform. This is a group composed of you and the governor of Maryland, as well as two Republican governors. What sparked the initiative, and do you have any concrete plans as of yet?
In 1986, Ronald Reagan was president. It was the last time we had comprehensive immigration reform. There have been attempts time and again to move this country forward on immigration by, you know, representatives in the U.S. Senate and U.S. House in Washington. They haven't been able to get it done. I do not agree on everything with respect to immigration, or many things on immigration, with Governor Stitt, a Republican, or Governor Cox, a Republican. But in the course of sitting down and talking, particularly Governor Stitt, the previous chairman of the National Governor Association, my friend Governor Westmore in Maryland, they said, hey, can we find some common ground and go to Washington saying, here's the solution that states want? For me, And I think there are some ways we can agree. For me, the immigration discussion in our country today must start with dignity and opportunity. Having federal officers go into Target, find people who are just minding their own business, who maybe have a civil immigration violation, maybe don't, ripping them, you know, from their families, sending them home. That's totally inappropriate. It's un-American. It needs to stop. Going to Haitians in chicken factories in Delaware with temporary protected status. They are here legally and saying, we're going to end your temporary protected status. The first word is temporary, so you're not allowed to stay here anymore. It ends today. You've been here for 15 years. You're thriving. You're making over $100,000 a year, working hard, feeding your family, breaking no law. We don't care. We're going to send you home. That's wrong. So the immigration conversation starts there, but it must continue to talk about, wait a second, can governors and states have a role in saying, here are our workforce needs. Can we have a role in saying, let's make the immigration system more efficient. Let's use technology so that people can get visas in days or weeks and not years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Governor. Thank you to all of the listeners who called and emailed. And of course, Governor Meyer of Delaware, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ask Governor Meyer is produced by Hazel May Bryan with help from Ben Abrams, Tina Kalake, and Al Banks engineered today's episode. Thank you to WHYY's Sarah Muir and Serena Grossi, and Delaware Public B is Ben Tabutier and Thomas Terry.
Kevin McCory is our executive producer. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager.
From Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Byrne.
And from WHYY, I'm Shirley Min. Thanks so much for listening.